And from the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and every week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news tonight, you'll hear about the folks who are killing the planet and the folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, and web addresses, so please go get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information you're about to hear, because this isn't Couch Potato Radio, it's Activist Radio, and I urge you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down in the Dragon at the road blockade. If you have information, announcements, or comments for Earth First Radio, keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact addresses later on in the show. And as always, we're going to start off with announcements. Okay, let me dig down in here to the announcement pile. Animal announcements. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is extending the time for the public to comment on habitat criteria for the recovery of the grizzly bear population in the Yellowstone ecosystem. You have until October 30th to write your letter or send your comments by email. Unfortunately, I only have an email address, so stand by for that. The overall objective of the grizzly bear recovery is to assure the long-term existence of grizzly bears. Hey, how about that? And available bear habitat is often determined by human activities. As grizzly bear recovery efforts continue, habitat criteria will be developed for each grizzly bear ecosystem to address the food, vegetation, habitat, and human activities in that specific area. When completed, the final habitat-based recovery criteria will be appended to the grizzly bear recovery plan. Comments should be postmarked no later than October 30th and submitted by electronic mail to... Let's turn down that trouble there. It was a little... Anyway, here's the email address. fw6_grizzly@fws.gov. That's fw6_grizzly@fws.gov. Please include habitat criteria in the subject line of the message. Okay. Other announcements. Casey Neal is on the road, folks. October 14th, he'll be in New York City, New York, at the Bitter End, 147 Bleecker Street. He'll be solo with Pete Seeger, Artie Tom, and others. Saturday, October 16th, in New York at the South Street Seaport Community River Festival with Neil Carter, Pete Seeger, and others. The 17th, at the Living Room, Stanton and Allen in Louisiana, and those are all in New York. Then October 30th, he'll be playing in Portland, Oregon at Zach Borden CD release show with Out of the Johns, with Out of the Blue and Sam Hill at the St. John's Pub. This announcement is kind of parsed funny. Anyway, Casey Neal in tour. Coming around, he'll be on the West Coast during November and December. And, well, actually from actually in November. In December, he's headed for a New England tour. And, well, all right. Let's see here. more announcements. Announcements, announcements, announcements. Here we go. The U.S. National Academy of Science, National Research Council, has just issued a new report on the value of biodiversity. It's entitled Perspectives on Biodiversity, Valuing Its Role in an Ever-Changing World. I think it would be of interest to some of you. Anyway, if you want to check out the full text, it's available at the following website, www.nap.edu. That's www.nap.edu. And if you want a hard copy, you can order that from the site, too. Okay? And the Dead Wood Management in Western Forest Conference is coming up in November, November 2nd through 4th in Reno, Nevada. The Wildlife Society is sponsoring a conference on the ecology and management of dead wood in Western Forests. Dead trees provide a host of ecosystem services such as habitat, new soil, water retention, and nutrients for other plants. Management activities as they relate to dead wood will be the topics of the conference. If you'd like more information, contact William Hull, H-U-L-L, at 510-465-4962. The information from William at 510-465-4962 or email to whull at cgbd.org. That's whull at cgbd.org. Eco Conference 2000s coming up October 15th through 17th. It's a national student environmental conference at the University of Pennsylvania. And they'll have all kinds of stuff going on. It's a weekend of workshops, speakers, discussion groups, and political action. Sponsored by 50 national environmental organizations, including Campus Green Vote, Students for Free Tibet, and SEAC. For more information, go to the website, www.ecoconference2000.org. That's www.ecoconference.org. 2000.org, or you can call 877-ECO-STUDENT, 877-ECO-STUDENT. Once again, the ECO Conference 2000, October 15th through 17th. The National Forest Protection Convention happening those same days. October 15th through 17th, the National Forest Protection Alliance will hold its national convention to discuss and build upon the campaign to protect public lands from commercial exploitation, especially logging. It's taking place near Carbondale, Illinois. If you'd like to register and find out more information, contact Jeanette Russell. Send your email to Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, at wildrockies.org. And the Centennial Conference for the Southern Appalachians, October 22nd through the 23rd. The Southern Appalachian Forest Coalition, it's their day-long conference. I don't know how a day-long conference can last 2 days anyway. Call them at 828-252-9223. That's 828-252-9223 for the Centennial Conference of the Southern Appalachians, either October 22nd or 23rd for that day-long conference. The Northern Rocky Mountain Law Conference, October 30th and 31st. American Wildlands will host. If you'd like more information, contact Judy at 406-586-8175. That's 406-586-8175 or jbrawer at wildlands.org. That's jbrawer at wildlands.org. And the North American Industrial Hemp Council Conference, November 4th through 6th. This is the fourth annual. Talk all about hemp and how hemp can save our forests. Go check it out. You want more information, go to their webpage, www.naihc.org. It'll be held in Chicago, Illinois. And once again, the date's November 4th through 6th for the North American Industrial Hemp Council Conference. www.naihc.org. And can wilderness be wild? It's, I guess it's some kind of a conference on November 6th in Utah. At the University of Utah Alumni House in Salt Lake City. Focus on the high Uinta Mountains. Really beautiful spot there. Be oriented toward a broad discussion of the value of large wilderness connected systems and the need to establish native wildlife populations, particularly large carnivores like, I don't know. Please call HUPC for more information. Their number 435-245-6747. That's 435-245-6747 for Can Wilderness Be Wild, November 6th. All right, what else we got here? National Forest Protection Coalition Convention. We already read that one. How about the Grassroots Climate Education Project, December 3rd through 5th? The Greenhouse Network is sponsoring, and asking folks to participate. They'll have a training session December 3rd through 5th in Portland, Oregon for 25 people who will then make presentations to the public all around the country. And you should have applied already, but what the hell? Send your email. Tell them you didn't hear about it till now. Send your email to eban@lclark.edu. That's eban@lclark.edu. All right. The Wildlife Society is sponsoring a conference on the ecology and management. I already read that one, too. Okay, that's it for announcements. Let's move into action news. And the big action this week was in Minnesota at the Minnehaha Highway 55 reroute demo. Here's a short version of everything that's going on because everything is totally insane right now and I can't spend too much time on the email, they say. Come to Minnehaha if you can. We need people. We need you. Here's the news. On Monday of this week, a tripod was set up in the middle of Interstate Highway 55 to protest its proposed reroute. People then moved existing reconstruction barricades into the street to shut down the highway. The road was shut down for blocks all day, and we had a big old street party. One woman locked down to a hauling truck and blocked the front gate of the construction site so they couldn't do any more work. Seven people were up in an old-growth cottonwood tree that they thought they were planning to take down that day. At about 5:60, state trooper cars came in. They arrested 13 people on the ground and attempted to evict and cut the squatted tree. They broke out the cherry pickers and fire truck ladders and wound up cutting the branches that people were still in, almost killing the sitters. Three people from the tree were arrested, one sent to the hospital. Four people stayed up in the tree. Police presence on the ground continued. They vowed to deprive the remaining sitters of all food and water, and they cut their lines so they can't get down safely. On Wednesday, a group of college students opposed to the reroute took over the Minnesota Department of Transportation offices. 12 people were arrested and are still in jail. The troopers and the Minnesota DOT and their contractors, in a retaliation move, went and cut 13 trees on the site where the occupied houses used to be. One person was arrested trying to get up a tree. She is still also in jail, bringing the total number of arrests to 13, the same as the number of trees they cut. And a couple of days ago, we got the rumor that they're going to bring in the National Guard armed with rubber bullets to evict our occupation on Saturday. We don't know if this rumor is true, but we know something is going to happen. State trooper helicopters have been encircling camp all week, and state troopers on foot have been seen in the woods scouting trails and tree sits. All tree sits are now being staffed 24 hours a day. Two people came down from the cottonwood sit today and are in jail. The remaining two say they're in it for the long haul. The troopers are still on the ground in an effort to starve them out. Things are escalating fast. Shit's coming down here more and more. More updates later as I get to a computer, or I'll call some of you from jail if I get arrested for a second time this week. No compromise in defense of Grandmother Earth. And this is from Natalia. Well, thank you, Natalia, for that action news. And in other action news, greetings from the Earth Liberation Front. We are claiming responsibility for the second attack on C.S. McRosson's machinery. In the early morning hours of Sunday, October 3rd, the ELF entered the construction site on Highway 55 in Minneapolis where the company is working. Machines that were found with accessible holes had sand poured into the oil, facilitating the draining of them. Three machines had hoses and wires cut before the elves escaped back into the night. This follows an attack earlier in the week on Monday, September 27th, when a visit was paid to C.S. McRosson's offices in Maple Grove, where we slashed conveyor belts and damaged machinery. We see Highway 55 as symbolic of the larger system that is strangling us of our air and water. The NAFTA superhighway and the roads into the forests are all a symptom of the sick capitalist society that puts profits before people or ecosystems. As long as the trees continue to fall, so will the profits made of this project. This is just the beginning of a new level of battling against Highway 55 and car culture. We urge the elves of Minnesota and the world to unite against the profit-hauling infrastructures around the globe. Target machines, offices, and equipment used to build roads. We are everywhere, we are watching, and we will be back. This is an ELF press release. All right, in other action news, stand up for the freedom to exchange information. For those of you who know about this, it's a computer system called Echelon Day. Echelon listens to all email messages transmitted everywhere. And the announcement goes like this. We, the monitored, have decided to stand up against the very real, very intrusive, and ultimately oppressive global surveillance system known as Echelon. Echelon is a vast mainframe set up in the New World Disorder in order to monitor the world's electronic communications for subversive keywords. Every time you or someone else sends someone else an email with keywords like revolution or hacktivism, for instance, Echelon's computers make a note of it. If you forward emails with regularity with words on Echelon's extensive keyword list, you may be marked for human hands-on monitoring. On October 25th, netizens around the globe are implored to send out at least one email with at least 50 keyword words. You need not be privy to knowing exactly what words Echelon uses. It is safe to assume that words such as revolution and manifesto and revolt, you can suppose environment and eco-sabotage might work too. Just be sure to sound as subversive as possible. There isn't even any need to write a cohesive paragraph or sentence. Echelon's computers do not understand the language anyway. It only knows how to look for certain words. By doing this, we can at least temporarily jam the global surveillance system. This day of action will be timed to precede the Stop Police Brutality Day by one day so that emails about actions can be sent out with little scrutiny due to that to what will already be an enormous workload for Echelon. Now is a chance for anyone, regardless of computer expertise, to become an instant hacktivist. Best of all, no software is needed other than your regular email program, of course. Feel free to conduct such subversiveness anytime. The larger Echelon's workload, the more free our speech. And after October 1st, we ask global netizens to merely stop censoring themselves for fear of spooky scrutiny by merely deciding to speak in the spirit of unabashedly subverting the dominance paradigm. We will make it quite difficult for Echelon to do its job. Let's move to activist news. At 7:30 on the morning of September 29th, Interfor, the International Forest Products Limited, employees tried to go to work at TFL 38, 20 miles north of Squamish in British Columbia, but they found Betty Croswicks, a member of the Grassroots Women's Network, Canada Party of Women, and a member of the Raging Granny, still on the road blocking their way for a third day in a row. At 7:40 a.m., Richard Byrne, process server for Interfor, read Betty the court injunction, which was granted to Interfor on September 17th by Mr. Justice Parrott of the Supreme Court of British Columbia. At 7:50, three RCMP officers made Betty the 14th peaceful protester to be arrested since the peace camp began 2 months ago. Well, thanks to you, Betty, for doing your work out on their road up there in British Columbia, protecting the old-growth temperate rainforests of North America. Here's another woman warrior. Gina Lynn, an animal rights activist from Northern California, was served with a subpoena to appear before a federal grand jury in St. Louis this past July. In compliance with this subpoena would be unreasonable and oppressive in that the government has no reasonable belief that the information requested by the subpoena is relevant to its investigation, said Jennifer Brewer, Lynn's attorney. Rather, the subpoena is intended to harass and intimidate Ms. Lynn for exercising her First Amendment rights for speaking out for the rights of animals. For that reason, Gina has refused to cooperate with and did not appear before the grand jury as ordered. On September 10th, she was arrested by the FBI at her home here in Santa Cruz County and taken into custody. She was held for several days. Now she is in St. Louis being charged with contempt of court and is facing jail for an indefinite period of time for refusing to cooperate with the grand jury. In a statement issued upon her release from the Oakland jail, Lynn said, "I'm being persecuted simply for my beliefs and activism in animal rights. Regardless of the law, and although my compliance with this grand jury would fully exonerate me, I have to follow my heart. And my heart will not allow me to aid the FBI in their malicious attempts to destroy the cause that I've devoted my life to." The background is that Anheuser-Busch allegedly received two letters that they deemed threatening, one in 1995 and another in 1996. Excerpts read in court by the U.S. attorney as follows: "If you don't release whales from SeaWorld, violence will come upon you, and letters, phone calls, and protests haven't worked. Can you handle terrorism?" The reasons given by the U.S. attorney for targeting Gina are that she happened to live in Southern California at the time, is an outspoken animal advocate, and an unidentified activist who talked to the investigators from the FBI speculated that it might be possible that Gina would be capable of writing such letters. Ms. Lynn categorically denies any involvement with these letters, stating, quote, "I'm not even involved in a campaign regarding SeaWorld. I don't have anything to do with these letters." What can you do? Take a stand, write a letter, come to a protest. That's already happened, unfortunately. But here's a fax number for Judge Rodney Sipple. Express your outrage that the taxpayers' money is being wasted to arrest Gina and hold her in jail. The judge's fax number is 314-539-7872. That's 314-539-7872. Let the judge know that you want Gina released immediately. And here's some news from the other side. Consider dying thoughts of a forester. I've never been compelled to write a letter to a newspaper before. I live in Wenatchee, Washington. And today in our local paper was a short article about the two women who are sitting in a tree in Glide, Washington. For almost 25 years, my father was a forester for the Bureau of Land Management. Half of that time was spent working in the forests of the northern Umpqua. He was involved in many decisions involving timber harvesting during the 1950s and early 1960s. 2 years ago, though, he died at the age of 70. Prior to his death, I asked him what he would have done differently in his life if he could do it all over again. He said he would have committed himself to saving more of the old-growth forests. But he was not a tree-hugging man. He was a very practical person and saw the values of trees as a harvestable crop. What he didn't appreciate was the total destruction of our old-growth forests. I hope if there are any young foresters in the BLM walking in my dad's footsteps, that they will consider his dying thoughts as they make decisions which will impact our future forever. And this was written by Sarah Berkshire Jones of Wenatchee, Washington. And let's move into animal news here. An appeal shuts down the old-growth timber sale on the Kaibab Plateau, saves goshawks and squirrels. Affirming an appeal by the Center for Biological Diversity, the Sierra Club, and the Southwest Forest Alliance, the regional forester has ordered the Kaibab National Forest to withdraw the Dry Park timber sale. The forest had proposed to log over 6,000 old-growth trees on the Kaibab Plateau, one of the few remaining areas in North America with significant expanses of old-growth ponderosa pine. Though the plateau supports the largest goshawk population in North America and is home to the endemic Kaibab squirrel, the Forest Service violated its own goshawk protection guidelines and refused to even analyze the effects of logging on the squirrel, turkey, deer, and pygmy nuthatch populations. The entire plateau, including the Kaibab National Forest, was designated the Grand Canyon Game Preserve by Theodore Roosevelt in 1907. Though Roosevelt declared that the forest should be protected in perpetuity and not sacrificed to the short-sighted greed of the few, the Forest Service maintains the preserve is a meaningless designation which does not limit logging in any manner. The Forest Service also chooses to ignore the fact that 200,000 acres of the plateau, including part of the Dry Park timber sale, was designated the Kaibab Squirrel Natural Monument Landmark, whatever, by the Department of Interior. The Center, the Sierra Club, and the Southwest Forest Alliance have launched a campaign to designate the entire Kaibab Plateau a Northern Goshawk Old Growth Preserve. And a judge orders habitat protection for two Arizona fish. 300 miles of river to be designated as critical habitat on September 20th. Judge Edwin Meacham ordered the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to designate and protect critical habitat for two threatened Gila River Basin fish, the loach minnow and the spiked dace. Though both species have declined about 10% of their former range because of logging, overgrazing, water diversions, and dams, the Fish and Wildlife Service has refused to protect the species' habitat because of intense political pressure. Critical habitat was originally designated in 1994 as a result of the center's very first lawsuit. That designation was struck down on technical grounds, however, in 1995. Rather than fix the paperwork glitch, the agency decided to not protect the species' habitat at all. This resulted in a new lawsuit and the most recent court order. Meacham not only ordered the agency to designate protected stream miles in 150 days, he stated that he expects the new designation to be more extensive than the previous one and to include stretches of the San Pedro River up to 300 miles long. And the Center for Biological Diversity has also filed suit under the Freedom of Information Act against the U.S. Forest Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service for failing to provide public information on the effects of logging on coho salmon in California. And we'd like to give our thanks to the Southwest Center for Biological Diversity for all this news and all the wonderful work that they do. Moving on in animal news here, 65 million buffalo once roamed America from coast to coast. Buffalo were essential to the survival of the Plains Indians, providing spiritual guidance, food, shelter, and tools 19th century American military leaders recognized the Indians' dependence on the buffalo and launched an all-out attack on the Indians' very source of life. Buffalo were killed by the millions and their remains were left to waste on the prairies. By 1900, only a few hundred buffalo remained, mostly in captivity. In the remote backcountry of Yellowstone National Park, the last 23 wild buffalo survived, the ancestors of today's herds. By 1997, the Yellowstone buffalo herd numbered 3,500, one of the greatest conservation success stories in Northern American history. Unfortunately, the success was short-lived. Buffalo are no longer welcome on public lands outside of Yellowstone due to powerful cattle industries. Buffalo winter there and calve in the spring, and grizzly bears need the essential food source of winter-killed buffalo carcasses that they find. The buffalo slaughter of the 19th century has resumed. The state of Montana and federal government agencies are killing the direct descendants of the buffalo brought back from the brink of extinction. There is a group of volunteers who are working every day out in the field, sometimes risking their very lives by positioning their bodies between the buffalo and the guns of those assigned to kill the buffalo. I urge you to obtain more information by contacting this volunteer group called Buffalo Field Campaign. The address, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. That address again, the Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. Or you can give them a call at 406-646-0070. That's 406-646-0070, or buffalo at wildrockies.org. In more animal news, Trout Unlimited is warning that plans by the Nevada lawmakers to rebuild a road along the Jarbidge River in the Humboldt National Forest in Nevada could spell disaster for the river's population of bull trout. Matt Holford, chairman of Trout Unlimited's Nevada Council, and David Best, president of Trout Unlimited's Elko-based Northeastern Nevada chapter, sent a letter last week that urged the Nevada State Assemblyman John Carpenter, a Republican, to consider alternatives to the road plans. The Jarbidge River is home to North America's southernmost population of bull trout, listed as threatened this spring. Here we go again, said Holford. Mr. Carpenter's plan to rebuild that road violate the Clean Water Act and Nevada law, just like the county's work last summer. In June 1998, the U.S. Forest Service issued a draft environmental assessment indicating that because of the road's tendency to wash out and the road's negative effects on the health of the river, the preferred alternative was to not rebuild the road, but Elko County Commission ordered work crews up the river to rebuild the road without any of the required environmental permits. The crews stopped work after 2 days without completing the job when the Nevada Department of Environmental Protection issued a cease and desist order. Carpenter has announced his intent to lead an effort to reopen the motor vehicle access along the road. And we'll get back into animal news after we take a little break here.